Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Probably an understatement to say it's been a roller coaster of a year for this year's Leaving Certificate students who finally start their exams today. There has been so much upheaval, hasn't there, in school learning and the hard work, adapting to online learning, and then hopefully this will pay off because so many are opting to sit the in-person state exams, and we're wishing them all the best of luck today. But on the line, just to give us a little bit more information about how the Leaving Cert is going to work this year and as well advice for students and parents, we have Guidance Counsellor Betty McLaughlin. Betty, we might start with that. There's been a big uptake in terms of those actually choosing to sit exams. Remind us again of what the choice that Leaving Cert students this year have.
Yes, Wendy. Well, in actual fact, and well deservedly so, they got a very good deal really this year in that they have more choice than they've ever had before. In the first instance, they have the choice of an accredited grade which will have been allocated to them by their teacher in school. That will have been sent to the Department of Education by now. The next thing that they had then was the choice to sit the exam, and sitting the exam this year is a little less painful than before as well, because the papers are very well modified to reflect the time that was lost in the face-to-face teaching, in the interruption to their educational journey for the last year and a half. So there is much more choice on the paper, and what is very much welcomed by students is the fact that even though they have less questions to answer, they have still got the same time that was traditionally allocated when they had to answer, when students in the past had to answer more questions. So it was very encouraging. It was very attractive for students to opt, where possible at all, to both sit the exam and take the accredited grade, and then to be allowed to keep the better of the two. So it really, every stop was pulled out with students at the centre of these decisions. So that is something good.
Yeah, and then how will it work? Because it's great to hear that, and as you say, Betty, well deserved, that there's a little bit of weight being lifted off the shoulders of this year's Leaving Cert students, because they've carried enough weight so far this year.
For sure.
So presumably, as you say, the accredited grades have gone to the department. What happens then when, you know, you sit your exam and then you get your results from the exam that you sit? How do you then decide, and how does that process work?
So what will happen is that decision is kind of taken out of your hands then in this stage, because the students on their student portal will have opted, they will have ticked the box that they want to be considered, all options considered, and they will be given the best. So when the points, when the accredited grades are put beside the written exam results, the department will be picking the highest grade. So say you got a H1 in French in the accredited grade, and then say you got a H2 and when you sat the exam, they will take the better of the two, which is the H1, and your points will, subject by subject, your points will be allocated like that to you.
Okay, so in terms of just how it's going to work, Betty, in the exam centres, is the setup going to look very different from other years because of, you know, social distancing and all that sort of stuff?
Yes, it will. Every student the centres in the exam have been 2 metres apart. They have been, which would have been much closer in years gone by. Students will be asked to go in and to wear their masks during the exam, and also not to gather around after or before it, which is a bit disappointing for students because it was very great camaraderie. There was great, we're in this together, great support for each other. But unfortunately, this year they've been asked to immediately, once they have finished, to leave the premises. That's just to keep themselves safe, to make sure that they don't catch the virus, because if they become a close contact, or if it's a thing that they do get ill, they won't be able to come in to be, you know, if they won't be able to come in and sit the exam, then they're depending on just the one option, which was the accredited grade.
Okay.
So they don't want that.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. We're trying to stay safe and say well. What about just, Betty, just in terms of, because of the format of the exams this year, is it likely, or is it going to have an impact, you think, on CAO points and kind of pushing things up this year?
Yes, but if you remember, even when they went up last year, the other side of that was that everybody went up, you know. So like for students that might have come out with 300 in the past, they nearly all would have come out higher than that anyway. But unfortunately, the CAO points race still is there, and it's still demand, and the high demand courses, there's usually a lot more applicants than there are places available to them. However, on top of the 2.5 extra places that were put in last year by Simon Harris, and Mr. Simon Harris into the system, they have now added another 4,500. And it is expected with the calculations done that that certainly will take the heat out of the accelerated points, which of course they probably will be more accelerated than when there wasn't such choice.
What advice, Betty, do you have then to parents who are trying to support young people at this time who are sitting exams?
Well, the first thing I'd say to parents is they are under pressure. There may be, it may be a bit easier for them, but it's still an exam, and an exam brings pressure. They may be in bad form. They may be irritable. So I would just say, have patience. Take a little stand back. Have plenty of food in the fridge for them. Try and encourage them to get sleep. Tell them that you're there for them. You're there to listen and support. And by all means, point out to them that these are only exams. They're not the be-all and end-all, and that they don't define the wonderful people that they are and will become. And that, you know, you're proud of them either which way, and you're here to hear, listen and to talk to them.
And finally, Betty, just to ask you, for students themselves who are still feeling anxious, still feeling stressed, and even that thing of, like you say, after the exam, there isn't that important part for many where there's the breakdown and the chat and the joy and the tears. What's your advice there on managing
that? Well, my advice is they're good on social media. Just talk to each other online, ring each other, have a little Zoom meeting between each other, but don't do a postmortem on the paper, because once that exam is gone, it's over and done, but you can do nothing more about it. I would say put it to bed, move on then to your next one. So not to be upsetting each other by having postmortems. What did you write? What did she write? Because everybody's exam and everybody's answer will be different, you know?
Very good advice as always, Betty. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today. That is Guidance Counsellor Betty McLaughlin there. Spirit. With me in studio, I have our music director, Garvin Rigby, where we're going to be looking at all of the latest additions to our playlist, both the contemporary and Christian music that we have been adding. Garvin, thanks for joining us. Let's start off, though, with one of the biggest Christian radio stations in the States. It's called K-Love, and they have put up the winners of their fan awards. And it's great because, you know, Spirit Radio has been a kind of pioneering contemporary Christian music here in Ireland. It's great to see a lot of the artists that were nominated and winners are on our playlist. So the Artist of the Year was for King and Country.
Yeah, King and Country, and they're a fantastic band. And look, here's the great thing about King and Country. So they're from Australia, but they're living in the States now for years. I think they grew up in the States. But their music is going across mainstream contemporary radio stations as well. It's a Christian radio station, so they are really good. The songs, we play them here, you know, we've got lots of songs from them here. In fact, they collaborated with Dolly Parton last year on a song which BBC are playing now.
That's actually, well, one of the songs of the year is Zach Williams and Dolly Parton. Speaking of Miss Dolly, that was the K-Love song of the year, There Was Jesus, which we also play. One of my favourite personal female artists, and I'm sure many of you listening agree, is Lauren Daigle. She was their female artist of the year, and of course we play her a lot too. I always think she sounds really like Adele.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone has a comparison of some artists, but she sounds very like Adele. But look, she's a very strong singer. And look, it was great to see the fan awards for the K-Love. And again, just to let people know, K-Love in the States would be the biggest station in the States. Maybe, I think it's something like 5 million listeners. You know, a massive station across all 50 states. So it's a massive operation. And speaking about new music and big artists and all that, so some of the big new songs we've added into the playlist this week on Spirit include, like I say, some of the contemporary Christian artists and mainstream as well. So the first artist we're looking at is Josh Bowen. He's a new song called Into the Wild. We added to the playlist there about 2 weeks ago. He's a Dove Award nominated singer-songwriter, and he's also a worship leader. He's released a brand new studio and radio version of a song, Into the Wild. The song is a joyful declaration to let go of our past, our fears and our sins, and to venture into a life of faith with God. It's taken from Baldwin's latest album called Evidence, and some of the explanation of the song is, I pray that you will feel encouraged and inspired to set out in faith and follow the God-given dreams of your heart and fulfill His purpose for your life. That's what Josh Baldwin says about the song. It's called Into the Wild, and here it is.
Of the unknown, I will trust you.
A little sample there of Josh Baldwin and Into the Wild, one of the latest songs on the Spirit Radio playlist. What's next then, Garvin?
Yes, one of the other songs added in there, of course, supporting our own and all that, is Niall Horan and Anne-Marie. Or, in fact, the official title is Anne-Marie and Niall Horan. So I don't know who fought over that to get their name first. But anyway, Anne-Marie and Niall Horan have a brand new song. It's called Our Song. Now, interesting about this song is that it's about the aftermath of a breakup and a heartbreak. And the lyrics detail the relatable struggles of trying to stay strong, but being taken back in time when something triggers a memory. So I think it's a fairly positive song in that what they're saying is that, yes, they might have broken up, but they're thinking back of memory. You know, everyone's first love, a song you hear on the radio brings you back to that first relationship that you maybe had years ago.
Even when you hear it 20 years later, Garvin.
Yeah, 20 years later, you remember that song, where you were, and that teenage disco, wherever it is. So I think it's a fairly good song. It's catchy. It's Anne-Marie and Niall Horan. The song's called Our Song. And instead of an emotional ballad Anne-Marie and Niall Horan say about the song, it's reminiscing the happy times in a relationship.
Every time I think that I can get you out my head, you never ever let me forget. Cause just when I think you're gone, hear a song on the radio. Just like that takes me back to the places we used to go. And I've been trying but I just can't fight it. When I hear it I just can't stop smiling. I remember you're gone, baby, it's just a song on the radio.
There is Anne-Marie and Niall Horan and Our Song. I have to say, I really like that because it is a different twist on the usual kind of breakup song. Yes. Because it's saying, yeah, this is the right thing, but I still think of you, I'm still reminded of you, but it's in a kind of happy way rather than a, you know, crying out the rainy window.
Or a resentful way. So certainly a more positive spin on a relationship, maybe from the past, you know, like, as we said, could be 20 years ago, you know, from your teen years, you know.
So the last song you have picked, tell us about it, Garvin.
Yes, I Am They are the act, and Promise is the name of the song. So here's the interesting thing about them. I Am They, that's an interesting name of a band, obviously, anyway. They're a Christian band, and here's the thing. They were initially formed as a worship ministry called Solomon's Porch for what was intended to be a single night of worship. So bear in mind, right, in 2008, this band got together to do one night of worship. They're now still together in 2021, still making music.
It obviously worked,
It obviously worked. I Am They. The song is about God, how God keeps his promises, and about your heart is believing and standing in a future victory. And some of the lyrics go, you keep all your promises to me, every word you're speaking, my heart is believing, standing in a future victory, all my hope in you, Lord, because you always keep your promises. And the song is called Promises, and the act is called I Am They.
Let's play out with that, Garvin. Thanks, as always, for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
You say that you'll come through, but it's been so long. It's like the desert sand goes on and on and on. But I believe there's something on the other side of all this waiting, where all of these tears are turned to celebrating. So no more holding back and no more hesitating, because I know you keep all your promises to me. Every word you speak in, my heart is believing. Standing in a future victory. All my hope in you, Lord, cause you always keep your key.
Spirit.
I think the impact that this past year might have had on some of us is you're kind of disconnected with things that you used to do, different routines, different things that left us connected to even spiritual things. A feeling that, although we know prayer, for example, is a good thing, we just don't feel like it. And to be honest, I don't know about you, but this can happen to me at the best of times. Well, our prayer coach today is Andy Carroll. He's a minister at Donabate Presbyterian Church in North Dublin, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So praying when you don't feel like praying, I presume, Andy, this is something that impacts everybody at some point or other.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, praying can be hard, it can be difficult. Sometimes you feel like you really want to pray, sometimes you feel like you really need to pray. But one of the things, when I was asked to come on this, something I've been rediscovering and something I thought I wanted to talk about was what it is to pray when you just don't feel like it. What it is to pray when you feel like God is distant, and maybe particularly over this last year or so, when your circumstances aren't what you'd want them to be. And I suppose one thing, Wendy, I've discovered over this last while again, or a renewed sort of sense of, is a prayer of lament that the Bible talks about. And I don't think we've got much history of learning about lamenting. So that's what I thought I'd get people thinking about today.
Okay, so start us thinking about that when I hear the word lamenting.
Yeah.
What should I think of next?
I don't know.
That's the problem, isn't it? As that, you know, when you have that sort of a strong feeling,
yeah.
Often we want to kind of run away from them or bury them rather than kind of engage with it. But even though it's a natural feeling, especially when you consider what we've been through the last year.
Exactly, exactly. It is really natural. I mean, we live in a broken world. The Bible says that the creation is groaning. Like, and we feel that. We see that. Like, listen, we've seen it so clearly recently with the pandemic that things can be really tough. But everybody's experienced that in all kinds of ways. And so the question then is, well, what do you do with God? I mean, is your relationship with God only there when you're on a, you know, when you're in the best bits of life of faith? Or is God still there when things are hard? And, you know, it's throughout the Bible, like Psalm 6, you know, David says there, he says, you know, have mercy on me, Lord, for I'm faint. Heal me, for my bones are in agony. God, this is terrible. Things are awful. Where are you? You know, and there's a whole book of lamentations in the Bible. And I suppose the thing for people who are thinking about praying or thinking about what it is even to relate to God is that we come to God in our brokenness, not in our strength. Like, God gives us hope in our weakness. I'm thinking even as a parent, you know, in the middle of the night, the cry from your child, right? They're crying in the middle of the night. And of course, you don't want to be woken in the middle of the night and you're thinking, oh, this is terrible. But you go and they might be frightened or whatever it is. You go. The only thing worse than them not, than them crying out to you in the middle of the night is them not crying out to you in the night. What kind of God would we have, you know, who didn't want to hear us or who refused to hear us in the middle of our pain and our brokenness? So God wants to hear from us then.
That's probably the time, though, Andy, that a lot of people find it hardest to pray. You know, when life is tough, when we are broken, when we, you know, you can have one of two choices where you want to turn to God.
Mm-hmm.
But the other situations where you want to turn away, saying, I can't pray. I don't feel like praying right now because of the pain that I'm feeling.
Yeah. At the very essence of what is to be human is to cry for help. We come into the world, a healthy sign of a baby is if they cry when they come out of their mother's womb, right? You're listening for that cry. So we come out of the womb crying for help, for need, okay? So that's a healthy sign. Now, a lament adds something to that. It's not just a cry, because we all cry. We all need help. But it's specifically a cry to God, who we say, I need help, and God, you're the one who can give it. So it's, I need help. In fact, it's specific. God, I need your help. And God loves to receive our prayers, loves to receive our cries of help. It says in Hebrews that Jesus understands all our weakness. Christianity is distinctive in saying that God himself has felt what we feel. He cried out, Father, why have you forsaken me? So if he can do that, then we do that as well. And I suppose for people who are struggling and are listening, and I imagine there's many, the first stage, the first step of, you know, prayer coach, or that's what I am, is to not ignore God in that, not think that you have to be okay, but that God loves to hear our cries of help. If you're lying in bed and you're struggling, instead of saying it's not time to pray, to groan like David says he does in Psalm 6, to groan and say, this is hard, but do it in a Godward direction.
Yeah, and so there's that idea of when we're having a really tough time and when we're in pain. But what about, Andy, when you're apathetic, you have spiritual apathy, you don't feel like it, you feel disconnected, there isn't a strong emotion other than I don't feel like it. How do you deal with that?
That is hard, and in a sense that's almost an act of faith more than anything. And an act of faith is doing something practical, is living your life. Faith is living your life in a direction even when you can't see all of the outcomes. That essentially is what it is to live in faith. And actually in those moments, and I think you're right, in those medium moments or the middle moments when it's mundane, that's actually harder than the crisis, isn't it? And in that moment, that's an act of faith. It's to call out to God and say, God, I'm clinging to something in faith here. Give me something that pulls me out of this. Give me something that happens in my day, something that comes from the Bible. And in a sense, that's an act of just opening the Bible, an act of sitting down to prayer, even when you really don't feel like it. And maybe it's a time, actually, in those times, is to find somebody. And Wendy, I've really needed this. I have valued, I'm a minister and I pray all the time, right? But boy, have I loved just having other people pray, hearing other people pray. And sometimes we need to say to somebody, I can't pray, I don't want to pray, God feels far off, would you please pray for me? even do it audibly if you've got somebody who'll do that for you.
Yeah, asking for someone else's help is a great way of thinking about it. Is there finally, Andy, such a thing? Maybe we put too much pressure on ourselves saying, or we're thinking of, oh, you know, when I used to pray and I was really feeling it and all that sort of stuff, that we just need to accept that prayer isn't perfect and imperfect prayer is okay too.
Absolutely. There's nothing that we come to God that God needs from us. Nothing at all. So it's a relationship. And the best relationships are the ones where we're loved unconditionally. And that's the attitude that we come to in God. And just like probably a relationship that you might be in, the buzz of the early romance and all of that goes. But when you're in a long-term relationship, actually the level of that love changes and how you experience it. And that's the same with God. You may not have the same peaks and troughs. It might be a little bit steadier. But God says, come. And actually we develop roots and we develop life in ways that we'd never have in that kind of just initial buzz phase as well. So, yeah, keep going. Keep having faith, trusting that God is there in the middle of those times.
Some really good advice for us today. Thanks so much for joining us today. That's Andy Carroll talking to us. He was our prayer coach this morning. He's minister at Donabay Presbyterian Church in North Dublin. Spirit. Well, local property tax was introduced in 2013. This happened just after the crash in Ireland. Now, it's still based on the valuations from 2013 and it was never updated and was meant to be updated every 3 years. So how is it going to be managed? How is it going to be monitored? Most importantly, I'd say for most of us, we're thinking, how is it going to affect my bank balance? On the line to explain it all, we have John McNicholas, who's the CEO of Ethical Financial. Okay, so what review is happening right now, John, in terms of the property tax bill?
Yeah, hi Wendy. I mean, the most significant thing from the property taxes, as you said, it's probably long overdue a review. The valuations haven't changed since 2013 for estimating what people are eligible to pay in their taxes. But equally, there was a loophole in 2013 whereby any new build houses, so houses built in 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, and so forth, haven't been eligible to pay the tax. They have been exempt from the tax to date. So probably the biggest change of this is more administrative, Wendy. It's really a review of it and to try and keep the administration of it simple or simpler than it has been. So that's probably the biggest take home from it. Your next question of how it'll be administered, is that right?
Yeah, so just in terms of what does it mean for the individual household? Because right now, you get, you know, a property tax bill that you can choose to pay up front or direct debt. Yeah. But are we going to see big increases now?
No, so the biggest change to this is that there's been a lot more houses added to it and the valuations are being updated effective of November of this year. So there's nothing urgent for now. They're the biggest changes to it, Wendy. The actual rates are... about two-thirds of people will see no increase in their rate or even a decrease in about 10% of cases. And for the kind of one-third that will see a bit of an increase, the increases are fairly minor, to be honest. It's not, you know, there's no big significant increase in bills. So I don't think people should be worried or, you know, trying to set aside additional money for their property tax bill. The big story here is that they're adding people to it and that they're kind of reviewing the tax as opposed to the actual monetary increase that people have to pay.
Okay, so do you have to...
For now.
Do you as a homeowner have to value your house or revalue your house? I mean, and how do you do that?
Yeah, there will be. So there will be a guidance. Revenue are going to put... This is kind of the announcement now to get everyone ready, Wendy. The Revenue will be publishing guidelines of how you value your house and by area... and other things to it before November when people are expected to have done it by and to value their house. So it's kind of an honesty policy in Ireland. You have to put your own valuation on your house according to the kind of guidelines that they review. So it's most taxes are kind of an honesty guideline when you're expected for your house to be within the reasonable parameters, you know, that they set out. So and as I said, the bands are increasing, or the valuation bands are increasing, so I don't think most people will get an increase in bill. That's not the big...
Because you'll fall into that increased band. But what about, John, I think one of the areas that maybe is frustrating is, let's say somebody who has... they're doing what the government is encouraging us to do.
Yeah.
They're renovating their house to make it more sustainable. They're improving the BER rating, and putting money into their house. Therefore, it's worth more. So you feel like you're being penalised for that.
Yeah, and look, that is the everyone hates taxes, and I'm, you know, I have to pay them too, so I can't say I absolutely love it, and a lot of people absolutely hate it. So that there is a kind of a, it's obviously, this is what's really happening here, is it's quite hard to strike a balance on these taxes, Wendy. You need to, you do need to tax the masses, so you need to tax every homeowner in order to get enough money in. But equally, you don't want it so punitive that it's, you know, that people don't want to buy houses any longer, or they don't want to upgrade their houses, as you said. They don't want to do good things to the houses because of the tax. So look, for an example for you, if someone has a, to keep it as simple as possible, if someone has a house worth €405,000, their annual tax bill would be €405. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not... it's not hugely significant that people shouldn't, you know, upgrade their property, and there shouldn't be a disincentive to the economy. And that's probably not, I think that's what the government are trying to set out, is the right balance, that is not so punitive on people that they get them worried or get them anxious, or that it, it becomes unaffordable for people.
Yeah, but the main message, as you say, John, is the bands are being widened. You, you probably won't be hit with a huge increase, so you don't need to be holding your breath just yet, which I think
you don't. No, you don't. The big, like, I mean, the biggest stories are that, like, there's now, the, probably the bad news, Wendy, is it looks like this tax is here to stay. You know, it's now, it's going to be up to $560 million a year of revenue. It's a lot of money. So the chances of it ever going again in the future are probably slim. You know, and then the other story is, I suppose, that it will be kept. The plan is that each local authority will keep their own tax take, so to speak. So Dublin's council will be able to keep and redistribute and spend the tax that they're getting. So I think the overwhelming story is it looks like it's here to stay. So we may just kind of educate ourselves on it and, you know, get familiar with what the kind of rates are to be. And yeah, that's probably the bad news. When you, when you revamp something, it means it's likely to stay for the long term. You know?
It's a bill that isn't going away. It has to be added to the pile. Thanks so much, John, for joining us on the programme today. That's John McNicholas, the CEO of Ethical Financial. And if you want to get in touch with John, you can go to the website ethicalfinancial.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.